Michael Chapman Giving Show is a compelling and informative half-hour weekly radio program that celebrates the joy of giving, sharing real stories from those who give of their time, talent, and treasure to make a difference in our world. The show also showcases inspiring stories from today's most active and respected charitable organizations, as well as interviews with humanitarian heroes and philanthropists. After airing on radio, the Michael Chapman Radio Show will also be made available as a downloadable podcast via the internet and mobile devices worldwide.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Michael Chapman Giving Show featuring the Queen of Philanthropy herself, Dr. Catherine Laughlin. How you doing, Catherine?
I'm good, Michael. How are you?
Well, you're looking good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes. I am so ecstatic this morning, Catherine. I really am, because I've been tweeting with this gentleman back and forth for the last few months, and now he's finally here.
That's right.
The best looking guy in philanthropy. Tony Martinetti, all the way from New York City. How you doing, Tony?
Great, Michael. Thank you very much for having me. Catherine, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, you too.
I'm excited. It's a lot of fun to be down here in Miami. Thank you.
Well, this is a very relaxed show. It really is. Catherine and I, we work well together. We chime back and forth. We're just going to ask you some questions. Tell us a little bit about yourself so that the listeners will know your background, what you do.
I've been in planned giving fundraising for 13 years. Got into that because I hated practicing law. Very unpleasant way to make a lot of money. Found a much happier life in nonprofit fundraising. And for the past 7 years, I've had my own business doing planned giving consulting. Also host a radio show, Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, planned giving, and charity registration consulting also, which is a compliance thing for nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Well, jump on in there, Catherine.
Well, tell us a little bit more, because we were talking before the show started, and I said, you know, when I ran nonprofit organizations, I didn't know much about planned giving as a nonprofit executive. It was only when I joined Knight Foundation and ran the Community Foundation program that I even learned what that whole side of philanthropy is all about. So give us a 101 in planned giving.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Planned giving is sort of a black box, I think, for a lot of people in nonprofits. Your experience is pretty typical.
Yeah.
Because it has a technical side to it, and that sort of discourages people from getting into it. They feel it's intimidating a little bit.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be. It's the technical part is so small, it's really negligible. Planned giving is raising money from people's estate plans or their retirement plans.
Mm-hmm.
And the simplest example, and actually the most common type of planned gift, is just a bequest in somebody's will.
Right.
And that's a great place to start a planned giving program. Just asking, you love us so much, would you consider including us in your will?
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing technical about that at all.
Right.
So it's unfortunate. Planned giving is a little off-putting to some people, but it shouldn't be. It's just long-term giving in what can be some really pretty simple ways.
Right, right. So does someone have to be, I mean, is the opportunity to be included a will situation only, or can people make annual planned giving investments into nonprofits? I mean, what are the different vehicles through which planned giving can occur?
Yeah, there are a lot of different vehicles. You always start a planned giving program with bequests, because wills, because that's the simplest kind of gift. Everybody needs a will,
right?
And it's easy for people to understand. So again, you know, not technical at all. That's really the place to start. Beyond that, there's charitable gift annuities. There's different types of charitable trusts. You can use life insurance to make a charitable gift.
Wow.
Those are the most common. I mean, then there's, you know, like, then there is some of the more technical stuff, esoteric, a little bit, like real gifts of real estate.
Oh, yeah.
Where you keep the real estate for your life, and then at your death it goes to the charity.
Right.
But we don't want to get too complex. There are things that people can do, nonprofits can do, even small nonprofits, with planned giving.
Now, why would this be important to donors? I mean, what are some of the tax advantages to doing it this way?
For donors, there can be capital gain tax savings if they use appreciated stock to fund one of the gifts I mentioned earlier, charitable gift annuity or charitable remainder trust. There's capital gain savings. There's income for life.
Mm-hmm.
That, in particularly in the, what I think is the tail end of our recession, fixed income for life, that's really interesting to people, especially who are in retirement or near retirement age. The charitable gift annuity, income for life at a fixed rate. Charitable remainder trust can also be income for life at a fixed rate. So there are some tax advantages, and also some of the gifts do give income for life.
Now, Catherine and I often talk about on this show that oftentimes when nonprofits, I'm speaking to nonprofits now, when they go to raise money, they always look for cash.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I very seldom see nonprofits looking for these types of assets. And why is that the case?
Yeah, well, I think that goes back to what Catherine said, you know, how she just discovered it when she was with the Knight Foundation. Mm-hmm. But it's off-putting. It's a little daunting for a lot of people in nonprofits to approach this, what they think is an overly technical area. And also, you know, the other model is people in nonprofits, in the charities, think that they have to talk about someone's death. Mm. You know, this involves death. Well, there's a component of that. I mean, a donor puts your charity in their will. It's cash at their death, just like all our wills, right? I mean, nothing is really effective in a will until you're dead. Mm-hmm. But that's not what the conversation is between a charity and a donor. The conversation is, you love our work. You've been giving to us for years. Why don't you consider us including us in your estate plan? Continue that legacy of giving. So it's not talking about death. It's talking about the donor's love of charity and that particular charity, that particular mission, and let's take it up a step further and think about your will or one of these other planned gifts.
You know, it's interesting because I think community foundations and also have similar conversations sometimes with folks in the community, and they talk about bequeathing in terms of let your legacy live on. You know, this is the way
right.
that we can talk about naming a fund after you, doing that sort of thing, so that we have you as one of our, you know, most valued
exactly.
contributors
yeah.
to
yeah.
our organization, and let your legacy live on, and really not going to what you just said, this death conversation,
right.
which is very uncomfortable, I think, for a lot of nonprofits. So can nonprofits engage with their donors directly around this conversation? Do you advise that they do that directly? Should they work through an estate planning attorney or someone like you? I mean, how does a nonprofit get started?
They can have the conversation directly with their donors. Again, you want to start your planned giving program with simple bequests. You're just marketing and promoting the idea. You love our charity so much, consider including us in your will.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And you know, Catherine, for a lot of nonprofits, that's the place to start and stop.
Right.
Because they're small enough that the other types of gifts are not going to be appealing to their donors. And they, as I said, some of the gifts do get a little sophisticated. But so stopping with a bequest marketing program, that's
mm-hmm.
ideal. That's a great plan giving program for a lot of smaller charities.
Mm-hmm.
Start there and stop there. And no, you have the discussion directly with your donors. Again, you love us so much.
Yeah.
Consider stepping it up and continuing your giving when you're no longer with us.
Right.
And
right.
But you don't have to get into detail on the death side.
Yeah.
It's your love of the charity. Consider including us in your will. And you know, because who do we include in our wills, right? Children, spouse, grandchildren, right? Loved ones, or maybe dear friends.
Mm-hmm.
So when a donor thinks enough of a charity to include them
yeah.
alongside their grandchildren,
right?
I mean, that's a really revered status that the donor holds that charity in. And so the charity needs to be able to say thank you, you know, in the right ways. And that's just a simple, heartfelt
right.
thank you very much.
Right. So do you recommend, or what is the legalities around accepting a gift? Does the donor need to tell the nonprofit specifically what they want their money to be used for, or is it an unrestricted gift, or can it be either?
It can be either. Most planned gifts are for endowment purposes, long-term giving. Not all, but most we find that they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're to support a particular program, but just the income from the gift should support the program.
Exactly.
And the rest, the principal goes into endowment,
right.
and then just the income or a portion
right.
of the income is spent. But it could be a direct gift too. It could be just a bequest of $5,000 or $10,000. I want you to spend it for
out.
This reason.
Right.
Actually most bequests that I see are unrestricted, you know, at the discretion of the charity.
You
know,
it seems like we yeah. just got a question that came in from
oh,
our
good.
Twitter feed.
Cool.
If you want to follow
somebody's
us
that's right.
on
okay.
Twitter, you can follow us now at twitter.com/MichaelChatman, Chatman. Dan Blakemore.
Oh, Dan. Yes.
Yes,
Dan.
Twitter,
always retweeting my stuff.
Right,
Dan,
you.
Thank you.
Question for Tony Martinelli, the authority on planned giving, is what are the top three strategies to steward planned giving donors?
Okay, top three. I would give you top two, really, Dan. And by the way, thank you for everything you do on Twitter. You're always retweeting my stuff, Dan. Thank you. You're a big fan on Twitter, and I love your stuff as well. Thank you. I would say top two because here in the midst of, again, I think tail end of our recession, I think there are two things that are particularly interesting. There's the IRA giving. And that's only for donors who are over 70, and they can make a direct gift from their IRA. Dan, I'm sure you know I blogged about it, but you can read a lot of detail on this exact gift because I did two blog posts. And my blog, you mind if I...
No, go ahead. Absolutely.
Check out my blog. Absolutely. My blog is at mpgadv.com. And I did two posts on the IRA giving. And then the other one that I really like in the middle of a recession is the charitable gift annuity because it is fixed income for life, and there's no age restriction on that. That would just age is just a matter of the charity deciding. Charitable gift annuities, fixed income for life. I don't know the rates off the top of my head, but roughly somebody who's 70 years old gets about 5.8 or maybe 6% of their gift back per year in guaranteed fixed income.
Now, Tony, when we come back on the other side of the break, I want you to tell us a story. We're real big on stories on the Michael Chapman Giving Show, a story where this has been implemented by a nonprofit.
Sure.
And it has been very successful for them. If you want to join us on Twitter again, once again, that is twitter.com/Michael Chapman. We're in the studio with Catherine Laughlin and the best looking guy in philanthropy, Tony Martinetti.
Thank
we'll be
you,
back
Michael.
In a moment.
Selling through speaking. It's the new way to boost sales without being pushy or salesy. Business owners, entrepreneurs, and consultants are using public speaking as a marketing and sales tool to increase sales, and you can too. Selling through speaking is the best way to structure and present irresistible offers that inspires people to buy now and allows you to enjoy big sales results. Visit sellingthroughspeaking.com and their experts will take you by the hand and personally walk you through creating a signature talk that easily sells your core products and services, all without being pushy or salesy. Call 305-479-2403 for a free consultation. That's 305-479-2403. Or visit sellingthroughspeaking.com.
And now, back to the Michael Chapman Giving Show on 880 AM, The Biz.
Welcome back, everyone. Continuing our conversation with Tony Martinetti from New York City. He's visiting our town here in South Florida. He's a planned giving expert. He's talking about ways of how nonprofits can raise money through some non-traditional measures such as gifts of stock, real estate, and also talking about how this is applicable to donors as well. Now, right before the break, Catherine, you had a question for Tony.
This is something I've wanted us to talk about on this show, and you brought it up, so I want to make sure to get your take on it. And that is this whole idea of nonprofit endowments. I think a lot of nonprofits think of themselves as money in, money out. And so the concept of really creating an endowment and only spending what they earn off that investment of the endowment is not, again, another area that I don't think a lot of nonprofits could think about. But it is a great way to ensure sustainability of work over the long term. So speak a little bit to that.
Sure. It's actually critical to what you just said, sustainability of your programs. Instead of living hand to mouth
exactly.
year to year,
yeah.
you build up what is essentially a savings account in a way,
mm-hmm.
and I'll explain what I mean. There's a little variation, but think of it as a savings account, but you only ever spend the income from the savings, okay?
Right.
Or maybe not necessarily even all that income.
Right.
We'll talk about that if you want to go into detail, like spending policies and things. But it's essentially that, a savings account, but you only ever spend the income or a portion of it so that the principal remains and it continues to throw off income year after year.
Right.
And you want to encourage gifts to endowment to endow your programs so that someone gives $10,000 to a program and let's say you're spending 5%
mm-hmm.
of your endowment, so then $500 per year,
right.
in that year anyway, would go toward that program that the person designated.
Right.
So you don't you don't seek gifts just to build endowment.
Mm-hmm.
You seek gifts that build endowment that are designated for particular programs. The principal of the donor's gift goes in this essentially account, but only the income gets spent. Now you know year after year you can count on a certain amount of income, and that's going to vary from year to year, but you know you can always count on some income to be supporting your programs.
Yeah.
Now the exception to that is, of course, you know, we're in the tail end of a recession.
Right.
Endowment values are down.
Yep.
That means income from endowments is, you know, probably negative. In most cases it is negative. That does have a program impact.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, a recession is what, 18, 20 months old or so. I mean, we will come out of it, and there wasn't a recession for many years before 18 or 20 months ago. So let's not just be in a recession mentality and thinking, what's the point of having an endowment? It'll never make money.
Right.
It will make money again.
Right, right. And so, and so I think a lot of nonprofits will think, well, we're keeping money, and we're supposed to be a nonprofit. Aren't we going to get in some kind of legal trouble that we have all of this money, even if it's in an endowment, that we're not spending? Help them get over that hump.
Well, my example would be, you know, I would say talk to Harvard University, Yale University, Princeton University, with their multi-billion dollar endowments. They are 501c3 charities just like yours.
Right.
It's the same. They're under the tax code, they're identical to you. So, yes, you are a nonprofit, of course, but nonprofits can retain money as long as it's been received not in in a way that's not related to their mission,
right?
You know, but it's through typical fundraising channels, and they can preserve part of that. It's for long-term stability,
mm-hmm.
like you said, Catherine,
mm-hmm.
of your programs. It's actually, I think, critical. It's not just sort of, you know, maybe we should. I think
right.
it's essential.
Well, let me ask you this, Tony. One of the things I wanted to ask you would be stories. Catherine and I forever talking about stories, that stories really bring it to life. Give an example of a donor who came to you who wanted to make a gift using some of these strategies you talked about, and how did it help him?
Absolutely, yeah. This was a woman who was in Florida, actually. She was in the Boca Raton area, and while she was living, I met with her with a client, and she wasn't really too keen on putting, that client was a college, putting the college in her estate plan. And actually she had an advisor who was there who wasn't too keen on the idea either. But we met, and it was all a very cordial meeting, but she just wasn't sure that it was the right thing to do. So I kept in touch with the woman, and she was elderly. She was in her early to mid-80s, I'd say, at that point. And I just kept in touch. And nothing obtrusive, but when I was in Florida, I would offer to visit, and we did the one visit, and then I came down, and then she didn't want to visit the next time I was in Florida. When she died, she did remember the college in her estate plan. She sort of decided, really, on her own. I guess I helped it along. I'd like to think I did, by just being a friend and trying to keep her close to the college. But ultimately, the majority of the decision was hers, and it was over a $1 million gift, including real estate and other assets for the college. And I think that gave her a great comfort, because it was actually her husband who was an alum of that college. And she had always said that he wanted her to remember the college, but she just wasn't sure. But ultimately, as I said, she did it.
Now, you have a book out. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, the book is on a different subject. That's charity registration. That is a compliance issue for nonprofits. They need to be in compliance with state laws everywhere that they are soliciting charitable gifts. So if you're a Florida charity, but you're soliciting gifts in Georgia, then you need to be registered in Georgia. And
mm-hmm.
the name of the book is Charity Registration, State-by-State Guidelines for Compliance. And there's information about that on my blog also.
And what is your blog again?
mpgadv.com. Or you can just also Google Tony Martinetti. I come right up.
Yeah, I see Catherine over there itching to get in. That's what happens with a 30-minute show, Catherine. You know how this goes. But
go ahead
and jump on in, Catherine.
You guys have a 30-minute show with two hosts. I have a one-hour show with one host. So what does that mean? It means I'm a narcissist, right?
Yeah, I like to share the mic.
Twice as long.
I share the mic here. Go ahead, Catherine.
I'm twice as long and all by myself. I'm sorry, Catherine.
So how would you advise? I mean, do you think that starting with planned giving, I think I hear you saying that it's not something that a nonprofit should wait to do. Is it something to really consider for the startup nonprofit as much as the sophisticated, older, established nonprofit?
Not really. Yeah, it's tough for a startup nonprofit to be persuasive around, again, starting with bequests.
Right.
Because think about it, you know, what you're trying to do is get the donor to include you in their will, and so that donor needs to be comfortable that your charity is going to live longer than they do.
Right.
And so for a startup nonprofit, of course, we all hope that that nonprofit will last forever, but in its first few years, that's a tougher sell, and there really isn't that confidence among donors.
Right.
So I always look for charities that are, I'd say, at least 5 years old, 5 to 7 years old, depending on the constituents, before they start thinking about soliciting planned giving.
And, you know, one of the things we talked about last week was the importance of nonprofits to be able to have numbers and tell stories about their work so that they have a track record of success that they can easily share with someone. It seems like, regardless of your age of a nonprofit, if you don't have those stories and that track record that you can share with a potential donor, that sell becomes harder as well.
That does as well, yeah. And typically, your best prospects for planned gifts are people who have been supporting you through the years, you know, for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you don't have that track record of donor consistency.
Right.
And I would encourage people, if you are 5 years old or so, and you do want to look at the potential for planned giving, look to your prospects who have been giving to you in all the years, if you're just 5 years old, all those 5 years, or four out of the five. If you're a charity that's been around for 15 or 20 years, look for those donors who have been around giving to you consistently for maybe 12 of the past 15 years, and don't pay any attention to the size of their gifts over that time.
Right.
It's the consistency that's key. Consistent, loyal donors, they think about you every year. Mm-hmm. And they're much more likely than other types of donors to think about you in their estate plan.
You know, it's very interesting you should mention that, because I was talking to someone who over the past 5 years had someone who gave like $50 a month consistently. And they never really considered that person as a major gift. And because they were faithful over those few things, all of a sudden they got $1 million check.
Right.
And so it's so important, and Catherine and I talk about that, the importance of really shepherding and stewarding even those small donors.
That's right. Right. Every donor should get a thank you letter.
That's right.
$2 donation, they get a thank you letter. Even if you know that it costs your organization more to produce a letter internally and then mail it than the $2 donation, well, let's face it, most donations are not just $2. But I do think, you know, small donors deserve recognition. They deserve to be thanked, Michael. And that's $50, you said that $50 donation, not a major gift. But if that's consistent over years, great plan giving prospect.
Now, Catherine and I are going to be doing a lot more in the upcoming weeks on small business philanthropy, and we have a lot of small business owners.
Yeah.
All of us in the studio are small business owners.
Mm-hmm.
Plan giving, what you do, how is that applicable to even the small business owner, not so much the Bill Gates out there? Because, Catherine, we talk about it. Everybody wants to be that Gates. Everybody wants to be Warren Buffett out there.
Yeah.
That's a mistake. Yeah,
yeah,
I don't think anybody should aspire to that. We should, I think, just aspire to a general contentment with our lives wherever they are, and aspire to more, but not necessarily to be a Gates or a Buffett, I don't think. Small business people, you know, now they may be younger in age. So I haven't mentioned so far, typically you start marketing plan giving to donors who are roughly 60 and over, maybe 55 youngest. And 60 and over. So small business owners, I think, may be younger than that. So I would say if they are younger than that, and you still want to pursue them for a planned gift, I would talk to them again about the charitable bequest.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't have a lifetime cost. So a small business owner, somebody who's trying to plowing a lot of their money into growing the business, might be appealing because it doesn't have a lifetime cost.
Right. And so corporations and small businesses could also think about planned giving, or even that annuity that you mentioned, as part of their corporate philanthropy. I mean, there's a way to sort of merge these things. I think corporations feel like, well, we gave $10,000 to Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and that was the extent of our gift, whereas thinking about what is our long-term commitment to a charity and how we could make that money grow over time instead of, like we said, money in, money out kind of approach.
Yeah, from a corporate perspective, it could definitely be a part of the company encouraging its employees to make planned gifts. The companies themselves can't make a planned gift because they don't have an estate and they can't get income from the gifts that I was talking about earlier. But absolutely right. Companies could encourage planned gifts among their employees to certain charities that the company finds appealing.
Okay. And should nonprofits who are interested in pursuing this, is there certain expertise you would recommend that they have on their board, to sort of help them guide them through this process as they're getting started?
Not really essential. No, not for what I've talked about so far, that Bequest marketing mm-hmm. program, mm-hmm. Bequest Promotions. The only thing you might prevail on a board member who is an attorney, or maybe a local attorney who's not on your board, to do is maybe a sample bequest. It would be one paragraph that you could share with donors who want to do this. Mm-hmm. It would have your legal name, your organization's tax ID number. I'd like to see the address also, and it would just say, to be used at the discretion of the trustees of the organization. So maybe a bequest, a template bequest paragraph, but that's as far as you need to go. You don't have to have expertise on your board or as a consultant. I mean, and I'm a consultant, but you don't have to have it
right.
for starting a bequest promotion program. Absolutely, not essential. Get out there. What expertise do you need? You need to be able to talk confidently about the great work that you're doing to donors
yep.
who are the right age and love your charity, and that love has been shown through their consistent giving. That's really all you need.
So it's not that complicated,
no.
right?
No, yeah. exactly. Thank you. I'm glad you, yes, right.
Very
it's
good
not.
Information. I'm going to have to add another title, not only the best looking guy, but the brightest guy in philanthropy as well, I tell you. So much information,
thank you,
so little time. It's amazing how 30 minutes fly by. We want to thank our guest today, Tony Martinelli, all the way from New York City. Check out his blog if you want to get more information about what he does in the area of planned giving, mpgadv.com. You can find out information about his consultancy and as well as his books. Catherine, you want to talk about our guest for next week?
Oh, yes. Next week on the show, we are going to have Javier Soto, who is the president and CEO of the Miami Foundation here in Miami, Florida, formerly Miami-Dade Community Foundation. They went through a brand change, and so we're excited to have him on the program, talk a little bit more about his leadership with the new Miami, newly named Miami Foundation, and what the future holds, he thinks, for that world of philanthropy here in South Florida.
Well, we're looking forward to having Javier on. He's going to be a dynamic guest, as was today, Tony Martinelli. We have about 30 seconds. Let me let you say bye to our listeners before I close the show today.
Okay. Instead of saying bye to listeners, can I say thank you? Catherine, thank you
just
very
like
much. Real pleasure. Thank you, Catherine. Michael
pleasure.
Chapman, always a pleasure on Twitter and elsewhere. Thank you very much for having me, guys.
Oh,
appreciate
thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you, too, Catherine.
Thank
really appreciate
you, Michael.
It.
And thanks for demystifying this whole thing for us. I think our nonprofit listeners learned a lot today.
Excellent. That's what the name of the seminar I do all the time, Demystifying Planned
well,
Giving.
Well, there you
Catherine,
go.
Right on the page.
Hey.
Thank there you.
You
go. Thank you for listening to the Michael Chapman Giving Show. We'll see you next week, Thursday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you.